Hare Krishna Balansa Hare Shiva Shakandetam Scha Shri Varshavanavi Devi Dayataya Kripavdaye Krishna Sambandha Vigyana Dayane Prabhave Namaha Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Satchidananda Namane Gaura Shakti Sarupaya Rupa Anuga Virayate Vancha Kalpatruvyascha Vipassin Vaiva Chavati Tanam Pavani Vyo Vaishnavi Vyo Namaha Jai Jai Harinam Chidananda Amrita Dham Paratatva Akshara Akar Nija Jani Kripa Kari Nama Rupa Avatari Jiva Daya Karila Yapar Ejai Gosai Kori Charanam Vandan Yavati Vigna Shavishita Puran Shiru Chi Sanatan Bhatta Raghunath, Sri Jiva Gopala Bhatta Dasa Raghunath, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhara, Sri Vasudeva Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Yesterday we were discussing the first part of Trinadapisanichana, which describes the quality of humility. Is one of the four requisite qualities for a devotee to imbibe in order to chant the holy name of the Lord without offense or aparad and become established on the platform of nishta, nishchita bhakti, and develop and exhibit the symptoms of that. So humility is very much important. Lord Chaitanya is giving us as the method by which one can chant without offenses and without and free from aparad by adopting these four qualities that are mentioned in this verse, Trinada Pisani Chaina. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he gives one purport. I don't know exactly where it's from. It's in the 12th canto in Bhagavatam, 11th chapter, verse 25. He gives the following meditation to increase one's humility. Vishnu Chakravarti says, "The earth, which is always visible to me, is an expansion of the lotus feet of my Lord, who is always to be meditated upon. All moving and non-moving living beings have taken shelter of the earth and are thus sheltered at the lotus feet of my Lord. For this reason, I should respect every living being and not envy anyone. In fact, all living entities constitute the Kostubha gem on my Lord's chest. Therefore, I should never envy or deride any living entity. By practicing this meditation, one can achieve success in life." That's what he's telling. So we should try to practice. In other words, the earth, it's very interesting what he's saying. I'm walking on the earth, I'm always seeing the earth is visible to me. And the earth represents the lotus feet of the Lord. It's even in the Virata Rupa that explains like that. The rivers are the veins of the Lord, Virata Rupa, and the earth is the feet. And he says that all the moving living entities, animals and humans and other creatures, and all the non-moving living entities like trees and plants and grass, they've all taken shelter. They're all sheltered in the earth. So the earth, first he establishes that the earth is actually the lotus feet of my Lord. It's Krishna's lotus feet. And all moving living entities, they're sheltered there. All moving and non-moving living entities are sheltered on the earth, which is non-different from the feet of the Lord. So therefore I should respect every living being and not envy anyone. We're all equal. Envy means someone is greater in some category or some respect than you, or someone has something that you don't possess and you become desirous of it, so it creates a certain animosity or envy. But you say, I'm situated on the earth, the tree is situated in the earth, the rich, the poor, the humans, the beasts, they're all situated in the earth. We're all situated at the lotus feet of the Lord. We are all equal. God is the one Father of all, and we are all His children. I should respect every living being and not envy anyone. In fact, all living entities constitute the Kaustubha gem on my Lord's chest. So first, he tells, Vishwanath is telling us we should practice this meditation that they're all moving and non-living entities are situated at the feet of the Lord. And then he explains, actually, all the living entities are on the heart of the Lord. Kaustubha gem is a very curious part of Vishnu's decoration, also Krishna. The necklace with this Kaustubha gem. Oftentimes we hear descriptions about the Kaustubha gem containing all the living entities. And also pastimes are depicted there in Swapna Vilas Amrita. Vishnu Chakravarti describes how Radharani remembers she wakes up in Nikunj with Krishna and she said, last night I had this dream, and in this dream I saw a beautiful golden man, and he was so beautiful and he was dancing in kirtan, or there was a kirtan, and then Krishna has a slight smile. Then in his Kaustubha gem he illuminates it, the same pastime that Radharani saw in her dream. She saw Gauranga Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan party dancing very much like she and Sham do at the night of the Rasa dance on the banks of the Yamuna. But she was perplexed because she said, I saw a very beautiful man, very much like you, but he was golden in color like me. But I didn't see me there. And Krishna smiled. So in this way, in one dream, Radharani experienced the future avatar. Well, it's not really future. They're both eternally existing. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, it's an offense if we consider that one came before the other. We don't know who came. It's not that there was Krishna, then he had desire for Vilas, and he created Radharani, which is also true. It's told in Tattva like that. And then later they manifested, they came together again as Mahaprabhu in an Audarya Roop, Audarya form. But he said, actually, maybe Mahaprabhu came first, and then he expanded as Radha and Krishna. We can't say. There's no chronology. There's no time frame. They're both eternally existing. So this Kaustubha gem, you'll see many different descriptions of Kaustubha gem. So it's not an ordinary jewel. It's not even an ordinary chintamani or special spiritual jewel to touch. The Kaustubha gem, unlike any other ornament on the body of Krishna, is often equated with living entities and pastimes. So Vishnath is telling, in fact, all living entities constitute the Kaustubha gem on my Lord's chest. So every living entity is sitting on the chest of the Lord, either on the feet of the Lord or on the chest of the Lord. Therefore, I should never envy or deride any living entity. And that's by practicing this meditation, one can achieve success in life. So this is the Phal Shruti, the benediction that's offered by Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in the 12th canto, chapter 11, verse 25. In the BBT, it's there. And there's some other discussion. When all the unwanted desires are cleared from the heart, one then attains the stage of Nishta, firm faith, wherein he serves Krishna with steadiness. At this stage, one's heart becomes radiant with the quality of humility and its symptoms enunciated in this shloka. Of all the thousands of shlokas, this one is so important that Krishna's Kaviraj says it should be hung around the neck for constant remembrance. And we mentioned that the other day, that verse. This first phrase, Trinadapi Sunichena, Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses in quite a few verses, about 10 verses in this Tritiyayam Sarana, verses 5 and 6 and 8, 8 through 13, and 16, 17, 18. So text 5, this is from Mukundamala Stotram. The glory is, he gives an introduction or a summary of this verse, the glory of the virtue of giving respect to devotees. And we put a note here in relation to humility, because when one starts developing humility within one's heart and mind as a devotee, then he starts to realize his own fallen position and his actual lack of spiritual advancement. Another title this verse is given, The Glory of Honoring Devotees. This is Mukundamala Stotra, number 35. Srinvansato bhagavato gunakirtanani dehe nayasya pulakod gamaroma raji. Notpadyate nayananur mimalambumala diktasya jivato ho purusho namasya. If upon hearing the kirtan of Hari's name, form, qualities, and pastimes, from the mouths of Guru and Vaishnavas, one's bodily hairs do not stand erect in ecstasy, his heart does not melt, and tears do not flow from his eyes. Alas, the word is dik, that's what the cartels are saying, dik, dikta. Alas, the life of such a wretched person is condemned. So we read something like this, and then we say, oh. I'm one of those wretched persons. I'm one of those condemned persons. I've heard the kirtan or the glorification of Hari's name and his form and his qualities and pastimes so many times from the mouths of Guru and Vaishnavas. And after hearing such Charikata, Guna Kata or Leela Kata, has my response been this? Bodily hairs standing erect in ecstasy, melting of heart, and tears flowing from my eyes. Fie on me, fie on me. Dik do, dik do. Dik do is dik, dik. Alas, the life of such a wretched person is condemned. So we have a society of wretched, condemned persons assembled over here. I mean, at least over here. This is a sadhu muke, the mouth of sadhus. Sadhakas performing bhajan condemn their lives and repent in this way. Alas, even though I have heard Harikata from the mouths of saintly persons, my hard heart does not melt. Why? Because of my offenses. The heart of one who just once hears the glories of Krishna's name melts immediately. But my heart has not realized this truth. Thus my life is condemned. There's a story in this regard. Once there was a person who would come to hear Harikata and the assembly of saintly persons. When everyone was hearing that Harikata, they would become saturated with bliss. But this man, even although day after day hearing the Harikata, no change came within him. He became very remorseful and very, very unhappy about this. So the next day, while he was listening to Harikata, he took out from his pocket some red chili powder and he threw it in his eyes. Red chili powder is really hot and burning. He threw it in his eyes, and his eyes responded naturally by pouring forth a shower of tears. The Vaishnava who was speaking Harikata, he noticed that this man was crying profusely. When the narrations were over, he called him, and he met and said, he praised him. Oh, the scriptures say, he praised him by saying, the scriptures say that those senses, the injury of the senses, that refuse to perform Krishna bhajan should be punished. And today you have put this into practice. Srimad Bhagavatam says, it is useless to keep those senses that are not engaged in the service of Bhagavan. When the man heard this, a stream of real tears flowed from his eyes. So the man was he was coming every day to Harikata and no tears were coming. And he was looking around him and he saw other people were crying from hearing the Harikata. So then he thought, well, maybe let me put some chili pepper in my eyes and then I'll cry. So then the Bhagavad speaker, he noticed that and he understood exactly what he had done. So he was speaking somewhat in jest, and he met him after the lecture and said, yes. Scriptures say that those senses, if our eyes don't engage in bhajan, or if our eyes don't engage in Krishna's service, then we should pluck them out or we should torture them. If our ears don't engage in Krishna's service, then we should plug them up. And if our mouth doesn't engage in glorifying Krishna, then we should sew it shut with a needle and thread. And any of our senses that don't engage in Krishna's service, or what he's using the term bhajan, they should be just, they're useless. They should be punished. And today you have put this into practice. So, because his eyes, he was hearing Harikatha, and it was not, and his heart was not melting, and tears were not coming out of his eyes. So he punished his eyes by throwing red chili in them. And so then he was crying. And then, when the man heard this description from the Bhagavad preacher, then he actually started crying. A stream of real tears flowed from his eyes. Then he really became remorseful. Then he really, it's like this. So this is, we could maybe follow in this pepper sampradaya. So if anybody comes tomorrow with pepper, no problem. Oh, very good. You're punishing your senses. In text 6, he's also quoting from Mukunda Mala Stotra. This is, yes. Humility will develop by understanding the glories of Krishna. That we mentioned yesterday. Krishna rakshati no jagatraya guru. Krishna hi vishvambara. Krishna deva samutitam jagaridam. Krishna layam gacchati. Krishna iti tishtati vishvam maitara akilam. Krishnasya dasa vayam. Krishna akila sangatir vitarita. Krishnaya tasme namaha. Shri Krishna, the guru of the three worlds, protects us. Vishvambhara Krishna maintains the entire universe in all ways. This world is manifested by Krishna. I forgot about this thing here. That is, this material world is manifested by Krishna's external potency. And at the proper time, pralaya, the entire creation again merges into Krishna. Krishna pervades the entire world. The entire world is situated within him. Sri Krishna manifests all wealth and opulence. We are all Krishna's eternal servants. I offer my respects unto this Sri Krishna. Krishnaya tasmai namaha. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he mentions a long Bengali verse, but the last line I particularly noticed. Janamale cha Krishna bhakti kari bhare. Krishna bhakti vina sava mitya e samsare. Krishna, you have arranged that the living entities take birth in human bodies only so they can perform Bhagavad Bhajan, without which this entire universe is useless. He says, Krishna bhakti vina sab mitya e samsara. This samsara, this cycle of birth and death, which the translators translated samsara as this universe, this entire sab mitya. Like they say, Brahman satya jagan mitya. The Mayavadis say this universe is nitya, false, and the universe is, Brahman is true. So sab mitya samsara, this complete samsara, this whole cycle of birth and death, and growing up, getting old, dwindling, everything, the whole thing is false. It's meaningless, has no significance. Vina Krishna Bhakti, if it's without Krishna devotion. This is the only purpose of this material world, is to engage in Krishna Bhajan. But the perverted mentality of the conditioned soul thinks that the entire material world is for Sharir Bhajan. Instead of Krishna Bhajan, Sharir Bhajan. Sharir is body and Bhajan is enjoying the body. Even the Christians have a religious philosophy which is centered around this concept of Ishwaraham Aham Bhogi. Krishna says in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, this is the Sura Sampat. Sampat means wealth or treasure. This is the wealth or treasure of the demoniac, that Ishwaraham aham bhogi, I am the enjoyer. So the Christian philosophy is, God has created this world for me to enjoy. This is a whole totality of Christianity. Oh God, you're so nice. And not only have you made a nice arrangement for me to enjoy, but I have a few additional adjustments. If you would just do a little fine tuning. Oh God, give me my daily bread. Oh God, give me a new car. Oh God, give me... So not only has he given us the whole world for material enjoyment, but then we make, you know, finer points of request to make that enjoyable world exactly individual to our taste. So this is just the opposite of what Bhaktivinoda is saying, that without Krishna Bhakti, without the serving of the Lord and engaging the entire world in the service of Krishna, then it's useless. It's nitya. It's false. There's no reality. So the jiva dharma, or the atma dharma, the dharma of the soul, the pure dharma of the soul, is actually quite different than the so-called dharma of Christianity, which many of us were raised in. Now in text 8 through 13, continuing the description of Trinadapi Sunichena, that we should be Sunichi, very, very down. We should feel very downfallen, downtrodden, that's the word, downtrodden. They have this word, isn't it, in English, downtrodden. Well, grass is very much, grass, that's what grass is all about. Trod means to walk on or step down on. So the grass is very downtrodden. It falls beneath everyone's feet. So this is the meaning of Trinadapi Sunichena. We should be very, very lower than the grass. So to emphasize this point of this phrase, these phrases of the verse, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was doing Mam Bhajan, then these beautiful verses from Yamuna Stotram by one of the Alwars, who was a precursor of the Bhakti saints of the medieval time, Yamuna Charya, he wrote about he illustrated his own humility, the humility of a devotee. He tells in these verses, which are very much, you can see how the acharyas, they read the ancient shastras of the great devotees, and they pick up the mood, and the mellow, and the viewpoint of their hearts and minds in relation to Krishna, in relation to devotion. And then they imbibe these moods and mellows and viewpoints in their own bhajan, in their own practices. And then if they're duly inspired, they again, in turn, write their own songs and poetry. So we read the poems of Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Sharanagati. There's 50 or so Bengali poems. They're all about surrender and humility. And we can see very much, in other words, they have a phrase, there's nothing new under the sun. So everything originally comes from Krishna. So here, Yamunacharya wrote these prayers, 1,200 years ago or so. And then they're very, very much similar to Gopinath and other prayers by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So you can see that he quoting these prayers in his book Bhajan Rahasyam, you can understand how familiar he is with these prayers. Now these prayers themselves from Yamunacharya became a basis for many of his own writings. Nadama nishto smina chatma vedhi na bhakti manstrach chananaravinde akinchanal nanyagati sharanya tatparamulam sharanam prapadye. There is a translation to this prayer, which is expressing the mood of Trinadapi Sunichena, the humility of a devotee. I am not fixed. I am not fixed in performing my religious duties, nor do I know my spiritual nature, nor do I have any devotion to the lotus feet of the Lord. I have no other qualification than this. I know that I have no other shelter but you. You are the only worthy refuge, so I take shelter under your lotus feet. So this is the kind of a continuation of what we were saying yesterday about humility with hopefulness, that we honestly realize our very insignificant and worthless and fallen and wretched position, but simultaneous to that we have these prayers of hope. But I know that you're kind and you're merciful and you won't neglect me, that you'll pick me up. So this is very nice. And the purport says, the sadhaka prays to Bhagavan in a meek and destitute mood. Oh Prabhu, I have no devotion to Dharma, no bhakti, and no jnana. So how can I remember your lotus feet? You are the savior of the fallen, Patita Pavan. You even give those who are poor and lowly a place at your lotus feet. Therefore, please deliver me, this degraded soul. Then your name, Patita Pavan, will become meaningful. This reminds me of when we're thinking about this, our wretched position or lowly position. Once Prabhupada was walking with a group of disciples. And then one disciple said to Prabhupada, well, one of the devotees in a temple, one of the devotees, he said like this or that. And so being a Vaishnava is like this. And then Prabhupada responded, oh, you think it's so easy to be a Vaishnava? We are aspiring Vaishnavas, devotees, trying to become Vaishnavas. Because the devotee is saying, well, this Vaishnava, Prabhupada said, really? You're saying this devotee is Vaishnava? Is Vaishnava such a cheap thing? So this is, Prabhupada is reminding us that we're aspiring to become Vaishnavas. In the next verse, text 9, these are a series from verse 8 to 13 about humility. And each one there, there's a similar mood. But the idea is that hearing such prayers, of course, if we're extremely dull and far away from the concept of humility, such prayers by Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Narottam or Raghunath Das or here Yamunacharya, they won't strike any familiar chord in our heart. As a matter of fact, they'll go right over our heads, or rather over our hearts, because we can't relate. But if we have some softness of heart, then we'll really appreciate such prayers, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur did. And he felt that they were so important. In other words, these prayers are important for whom? For Bhaktivinoda Thakur? For Kamala Manjari? Radharani's inner circle of Manjaris, Kamala Manjari, Nayana Manjari, Rupa Manjari, Ananga Manjari, Vilas Manjari. These prayers are the rahasya. They're the secret prayers. These are secret. Everything here is secret. So every verse is secret. And it's a secret related to bhajan, bhajan rahasyam. So there's so many prayers of humility from so many sources, because practically the whole Bhagavatam is full of prayers. The whole Srimad Bhagavatam, the 18,000 shlokas, probably one-fourth of them are prayers. Nagapatnis and this one and that one and Gajendra and it's just Indra and Brahma and Shiva's prayers, and they go on and on and on. It's nothing but prayers. And so many prayers of humility and admitting the greatness of the Lord and the fallen, wretched condition of the particular person praying. So of all those thousands and thousands of prayers that describe the quality of humility, and certainly Bhaktivinoda Thakur is aware of all those prayers, he has picked out 6 prayers to describe humility. So when you think of that, that makes you humble. When you think of that, then it makes a humble approach to these prayers of humility. These must be important. There must be something important here. It's a rahasyam. This book is called Bhajan Rahasyam. So every one of these verses, there's about maybe 250 verses giving his revealing the secrets of Shikshastakam and the Yugal Nam, the 8 Yugal pairs of mantras, 8 pairs of mantras in the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So this one, this is the third pair. This is Krishna, Krishna. So, we don't want to get ahead of the game, but so Krishna, Krishna is represented here by this Trinadapi Sunichena. Krishna, Krishna is represented here by humility. Krishna, Krishna is represented here by tolerance. Krishna, Krishna is represented here by respecting all. Krishna, Krishna is represented here by not expecting or desiring any respect for anyone else. This is the third pair of the holy names. And that represents the Apurvan Leela also. So in this prayer, This is text number 9. I don't think I didn't chant it yet, did I? No. Naninditam karma tadasti loke sahasrasho yannamaya vidyadayi soham vipaka vasare mukunda krandhami sampratnya gachista vagre. O Prabhu, O Hari, there is no wicked or sinful activity I have not performed thousands and thousands of times. And I will suffer for them. O Mukunda, I see that besides you there is no other shelter. I am constantly crying, praying before you. If you so desire, punish me, for you are the ruler of this destitute body. Krandami, crying. Krandan means crying. This is purport. It's basically repeating the same thing, but it's nice purport. O Lord, birth after birth I have performed innumerable sinful and contemptible activities. To describe them all to you is not even possible. But as you are omniscient, you know of them anyway. So now I come before you, clasping a piece of straw between my teeth, humbly requesting you to please deliver me, even by giving me punishment. O Prabhu, as a result of my numerous offenses, Maya crushes me just as one crushes a stick of sugar cane. Now, we've all been to India and maybe even taken part in that. Sugarcane juice is very healthy and tasty, but when you go there and you see all the flies all over the place, you lose your appetite. I haven't had any in years because it's so dirty. But if you can buy it and make your own juice somehow, or just chew on it, which you can also do, peel it. That's what we do actually in this Ekadasi. This Ekadasi, everyone should offer sugarcane. This is an offering that one should offer their shalagrams on the 12th, on Uttani Ekadasi. All the devas, when they wake up, they have a glass of sugarcane juice. It's called Ganaras. It's a nice thing when you're sleeping for 4 months and need a little jolt, little energy juice, tonic. So they all the temples practically in India, they will offer so much Ganaras, and the devotees will harvest the sugarcane is growing now. They'll harvest the fresh sugarcane, and then they'll bring it to the temple and offer it to the deities. So you can cut it. You cut off sections, and then you peel it. You can cut with a knife and a little hammer. You can peel off the outer section, and the inside white pieces you can cut in little chunks like little pieces of candy, and offer it to your Thakur on the 12th of November, Uttani Ekadasi. So everyone has seen these steel rollers in this machine. It's something like it was one hellish planet where those policemen and other people that offend the devotees and stop the Sankirtan movement, they go to this hellish planet where there's grinders and like a wood chipper. They have these wood chippers in the West. They have these machines, very high-powered motors with these two rollers, metal rollers, and they take little trees and they put them in there, and the trees turn into sawdust and the wood chips. It's called a chipper. High power. And so they have machines like that in hellish planet where they put the policeman in there between the rollers, and he comes out like a pancake on the other side, like an automatic chapati roller or something. Like they had in LA, they used to make the little ball and throw it in and come out like flat. So we've all seen that they put the sugar cane in and it comes out the other side, and the juice drips down and it's just like flat. So this is what is being said here. As a result of my numerous offenses, Maya crushes me just as one crushes a stick of sugar cane. What does that mean? I mean, sugar cane is full of juice. It's full of rasa. And, enjoying, and that represents, that rasa represents the taste of enjoyment or the taste of pleasure. So Maya has squeezed us. Maya has literally crushed us in her grips between her two rollers and squeezed all the enjoying spirit out of us, and all the juice of enjoyment has been squeezed out of us repeatedly. And it says, as a result of my numerous offenses, Maya crushes me. So, our offenses are enjoying without Krishna. So we try to enjoy without Krishna, so then Maya crushes us, and all that enjoying juice comes out of us. So it's a very pictorial analogy here. Just pretend you're being put through that machine by Maya. She's the juice walla. She's the juice wally. Maya's a sugar cane wally. And you're the sugar cane. Our body's a sugar cane. My tearful request to you is to please purify this destitute person by punishing him, since you give liberation to the jivas. One of your names is Mukunda. Therefore, please liberate me from these sins and bestow upon me the service of your lotus feet. So this theme is there everywhere. We're always reminded in all the books that we read this theme of humility. Krishna's Kaviraj is also telling in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Jagai madhe haite muni se papishta purishara kita haite muni se lagishta emana negrina more keva kripa kare ekanityananda vina jagata bitare. I am more sinful than Jagai and Madhai, and even lower than a worm and stool. Purishara kita. Who in this world but Nityananda could show his mercy to such an abominable person as me? This is nice. Text 10, again, this humility. Imajato nanta bhavarna varnam nantas chirayame kulam evasi labdham tuyapi labdham bhagavan nidanim anuttamam patram idam dayayaha. O Ananta, since time immemorial, I have been drowning in this unlimited ocean of material existence. The hope of one day attaining your lotus feet is the shore of this ocean. In other words, a drowning in material existence. And drowning means you're in the middle of the water, in the ocean. And if you come to the shore, it means the beach. That means you're on the dry land, you're safe, you're not drowning anymore. So the hope of attaining the feet of Krishna is the shore, is the safe shore, is the shelter from this drowning in the ocean. The hope of one day attaining your lotus feet is the shore of this ocean, unlimited ocean of material existence. Immersed in this material existence, I am tearfully praying to you with a distressed voice to please appear as Guru and deliver me. So this is the prayer of humility, praying that Krishna will come and deliver one, because the only way we get delivered from the ocean of material existence is by the mercy of Guru. And then text 11. Avantam eva anucharan nirantara prashanta nishensha manovratantara kadahamai kantika nitya kinkara prahasha yashyami sanata jivatam sanat sanat jivatam. A jiva with the master, sanat. All mental creations and desires are alleviated and the mind pacified by uninterrupted service to you. When will I be designated as your eternal servant? When will I be radiant with joy, having obtained such a competent master as you? So these verses have a sequence. There's a krama here. The first few prayers, 8, 9, and 10. He's saying, I'm destitute, I'm fallen, I'm in this ocean. And then he starts to formulate the prayer of humility. I'm really fallen, and you're so great, and I'm so fallen, I'm really suffering. Then he thinks, oh, but please, your nature is Patita Pavan, and please come and deliver me. And then, oh, how will you come? How will you come and deliver me? You'll come as Guru. So then the previous prayer, he says, please, you come. Please appear as Guru and deliver me. So that's verse 10, and there's 13 in this series of Yamunacharya. So now in text 11, now he has Guru, and now he's delivered, now he's engaged, so he's saying, oh, now I'm situated, now I'm peaceful, because all these things are happening, my mental creations, my desires, they're alleviated, They're cooled down. My mind is pacified. I become peaceful. How? By uninterrupted service to you. So that is that Guru came and he delivered me. He took me to the shore, took me out of the material ocean, engaged me in the service. Now my mind has become peaceful and my desires are becoming alleviated. When will I become designated as your eternal servant? When will I be radiant with joy, having obtained such a competent master as you? Hare Krishna. So this is the purport. While chanting, the sadhaka prays as follows. So this is, everyone hear that? While chanting. So here in Bhaktivinoda Thakur is telling in Bhajan Rahasyam that sometimes when we chant, we can think of the meaning of the holy name. And hear, chant, and remember. This is the actual three things. Most of the time, for the very, very neophyte devotees that couldn't do too much because their brains were too cluttered with material desires and aparads and anarthas, Prabhupada would emphasize, just chant and hear. That's called Shravanam and Kirtanam. Then there are other instructions where Prabhupada says, just chant, hear, and remember Krishna's pastimes. So, the beginning student, you tell him, you count 1 to 10. So that's in kindergarten. Then when you graduate and go to the next grade, then the teacher says, now you count 1 to 100. Oh, now I count 1 to 100. 10, 11, 12, 13. Because he's more advanced, he's in a higher class. So Prabhupada, he did say, only just chant the holy name and hear the holy name. So that's step 1 and 2, Shravanam, Kirtanam. But he also said, chant the holy name, hear the holy name, and remember Krishna's pastimes. So that's step 1, 2, and 3. So the third step takes different shapes. Now it's Smaranam. So Smaranam is step 3. We're hearing very attentively. And some people, we were talking to someone on the phone, and they said, oh, how is it possible? How can I? Because I said, if you were by yourself, you could read onto a tape or MP3 or CD. You could record some pastimes of Krishna. You could read yourself from some Bhagavatam or Govinda Lilamrita. Then you can play that. And when you're chanting, you chant the holy name and absorb yourself in the sound vibration. And you can listen and meditate on this pastime. It's very nice. He said, oh no, how is it possible? How can you hear the holy name and concentrate on hearing and also hearing and chanting and concentrate on that and also be paying attention to this narration of the tape is playing some pastimes of Gauranga Leela or Krishna Leela. I said, what? I said, really, are you that dumb? Are you that foolish that you can't do these things? Take any ordinary housewife. And this person has a degree from college, MBBS. I say, take an ordinary housewife. Maybe she doesn't have any degree, but let's take a look. Let's drop into the kitchen at 11 o'clock in the morning and see what she's doing. She's cooking lunch for her husband. She's watching a soap opera on a television, which is in the kitchen. She's talking on a telephone to her girlfriend. And she has in her ear, she has a little space for the baby who's sleeping in the baby's room. You know, the baby, just in case he starts crying. And so she has part of her attention is with the baby. Just, as soon as he cries a little bit, then she immediately drops the telephone, drops the TV, drops the cooking, and goes and attends to the crying baby. So an ordinary housewife can do 4 things at once with full attention. She doesn't burn the cooking. She doesn't miss any of the soap opera. She knows each scene of the soap opera, who went out with who and who divorced who and, you know, the whole soap opera. And she knows everything from the telephone, gossip and this and that, or prices of saris went up or down, or whatever. So she's coordinating 4 things at once, perfectly, fully attentive maya. But yet, in Krishna's service, oh, Prabhu, Maharaj, how can I chant 3 words and hear them, and also meditate on, or hear pastimes? I said, believe me, it's possible. You can do that and so much more than that also. So this is, so in this particular purport is saying, while chanting the sadhaka prays, so in the category of smaran, shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam, smaranam can take different shapes. One is that one may chant the holy name, and while he's chanting, he can, from chanting and hearing very attentively the 3 words of the Hare Krishna mantra, he can also offer prayers to the Lord. The prayers are coming within his heart. And the prayer, one of the best prayers is the Shikshastakam, and then meditating on the meaning. So here, this purport is saying, while chanting the sadhaka praise, you can pray like these prayers of humility, you can also pray. The sadhaka praise as follows. O Prabhu, you are the Lord of the universe, and I am your servant. But because of being opposed to you, I have gone far away from you. Now I am tormented by the three kinds of afflictions of your maya. Right? Adi Atmika, Klesha, Adi Bodhika, Adi Daivaka. Please bestow the mercy of your lotus feet upon this unfortunate person. Prabhu, when will that auspicious day come when illusory desires leave my heart and I become your unalloyed servant? At that time, I will please you by fulfilling your inner desire, Manobishta, Manobishta Seva. Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale. So this next prayer is also humility from Yamunacharya. Aparara Sahasrabhajanam Patitam Bhima Pavanavardare Agatim Shananagatim Hare Kripaya Kevalam Atmasatkuru. O Hari, I am an offender, guilty of thousands of offenses and therefore punishable. I am drowning in this fearsome ocean of material existence. Lost, I take shelter of your lotus feet. Please make me your own. You have promised that you will definitely deliver anyone who has taken shelter of you. Please, therefore, deliver me also. So the purport basically is a retelling of the translation. The idea is that we read this prayer of Yamunacharya, which is one of the secrets of developing humility that Bhaktivinoda has given us in his commentary on Trinadapi Sunichena. And we can memorize it and try to enter deeply into the meaning of it and mix our heart with the heart of Yamunacharya and pray to Yamunacharya as being one of the Bhakti Alwars of devotion, the great devotees of the Lord, of Vishnu. We can pray, oh, you have written such a wonderful prayer of humility. Please bless me that these feelings of humility will come in my heart. Because here I am, I'm reading your prayer, and even I'm trying to memorize the wording of your prayer 1,200 years after you wrote it. You wrote this prayer 1,200 years ago, and still it's valuable, still it's important, still our own, the gurus in our line, our acharyas, our guardians of devotion, are recommending this, your prayer to all of us. And we are not even the same line that you are. You're in the line of Vishnu Bhakti, Vaikuntha Bhakti, the Alwars. We are in the line of Radha Krishna Bhakti, more specific, Pali Rasi Bhav, Manjari Bhav. Such a high, such an intimate mood of devotion we are aspiring to attain. But yet, we are told by our Manjari gurus and by our well-wishers to study the prayers of the Alwars. And they're in Vishnu Bhakti, which is, in one sense, in terms of Lila Ras, a slightly lower viewpoint of the Absolute. So this is told in the purport. O Lord, I am suffering punishment for my thousands and thousands of offenses. As a fallen soul amidst the towering waves of the fearful ocean of material existence, I am without shelter. Sometimes the waves in this ocean submerge me, and sometimes they lift me up and knock me down again. In this condition, you who deliver persons from the ocean of material existence are my only friend. Please be merciful to me and make me your own. I have heard from the mouths of sadhus that you certainly deliver those who have surrendered unto you. This is your promise. Therefore, O Lord, I am situated at your lotus feet with the hope and faith that you will surely deliver me. Actually, this, what we read is the translation of the Bengali verse, which is paraphrasing Yamunacharya's prayer in Sanskrit. Bhaktivinoda is put in Bengali, and what we read was the translation of that verse. Bhima means horrible or big, huge waves. This is the last text of Yamanacharya. Namrisha paramartam eva me shina vigyapanam ekam agragata yadi me na dayishyase tato dayaniyas tavanat durlabam. O Hari, I am submitting at your lotus feet a petition in which there is not the slightest untruth. You may or may not be merciful to me, but my complete prayer, which is full of meaning, is that if you are not merciful to me, then it will be impossible for you to find a more suitable candidate for your mercy in this entire material existence. In other words, you're giving out mercy, and you're Daya Maya. You're made of Daya or mercy, compassion, and look at me. You won't find in all universe a more suitable candidate. Your name is Daya Maya, one who is full of mercy. Therefore, if you don't make me the object of your merciful sidelong glance, your name will be disgraced. People will criticize you. Hey, what you forgot about him? You're Dayamaya, and he is praying. Hey, Kripakuro, give me mercy. Do mercy, give me mercy. Act mercifully. And you overlooked him? You ignored him? This doesn't look very good. Everyone will criticize you. The demigods will condemn you. Lakshmi Devi will give you a hard time. So these are some verses on humility, and then there's a few more. Actually, these verses are towards the end of the chapter. And this type of, now as he develops the theme of humility in the last few verses, it starts to, because humility is the constant companion of the progressive devotee. This is our friend. There's some place in the Bhagavatam where it says that my mother is compassion, and my father is tolerance, and my children are mercy, and my relatives are. It has all these qualities. Are the family members of the sadhaka? I can't remember where, but so humility should become our best friend. This is it, especially for the Gaudiya Vaishnava. Humility is. You should hold hands with humility, make very compact relationship with this quality of humility. And as he associates with this person named Humility, or Dainya Prakash, or Swayam Dainya, the form of humility, then he himself may become the personification of humility and thereby attract the attention of the Lord and become a suitable residence for Namprabhu to reside. Because sometimes, just like they say on Diwali, that about 9 o'clock at night, Lakshmi Devi on Diwali day, which is the Kartik Amavasya evening, aside from other meanings of Ramachandra returning to Ayodhya, that was a Naimittik Leela. But a Nitya Leela is that every year on Amavasya, Diwali and Kartik, the wife of Lord Vishnu, Lakshmi Devi, she dresses up very beautifully. Well, she's always pretty much dressed up, I would imagine. But she dresses up even more attractively. And she travels around the world. She travels this world. And she looks for some place to reside. She's looking for a place to reside. So she wants to find some place that's very clean and very attractive and very well lit. Because she's a Brahmani, Lakshmi is a Brahmani, so naturally Lakshmi Devi is situated in Sattvagun, and one of the qualities of Sattvagun is purity and enlightenment and cleanliness. As we say, cleanliness is next to godliness. So she's looking for a very clean and sattvic and well-lit area. So if you go to the big cities in India, on Diwali, the people, it's something like what we do in the West, or someday when everybody puts lights on their house. Was it Christmas or something? Christmas, yeah, Christmas.
Been a while, hasn't it?
I mean, we're all devotees, so we don't do much Christmas anyway. So that's like 30 years in ISKCON, and we're all in ISKCON. But I've been here for 18, so I haven't even seen any Christmas lights. So the equivalent of Christmas lights, they do on Diwali. So the rich people, or people that can afford all the lights, they really light up their houses. I mean, just like the rich people do on Christmas in the West. They have all the trees are full of twinkly lights, and the driveway, and the plants, and the bushes, and the windows, and the chimneys, and the roof lines, you know, the whole deal. So they do like that. And so the poorer section of Indians will get a few clay pots and put some mustard oil in it and a piece of cotton and light up some ghee lamps here and there on their walls and near their wells, near their doors and windows, near the front gate, the obvious entrance places. They will light up very nicely, and they will put garlands of auspicious leaves like mango and ashok and flower garlands, and they will repaint their house. You may have noticed if you've been in India at this time of year, Diwali, which was only, I suppose, about 7 days ago. Everybody is whitewashing their house with a fever. The day before, everyone's whitewashing their walls and putting coloring new yellow and pink and purple and green, all these very pastel, wild, bright Indian pastel colors. Because they want Lakshmi to say, oh, there's a nice house, freshly painted, very clean and neat, and beautiful ghee lamps. Oh, I want to go there. So then she goes there. And then she stays there for 1 year. And while she's living there in that place, she brings fortune to that house. So the belief of the Indian people must be, of course, based on Shastra, which I haven't particularly read at this point. But it's understood, universally understood, this by everyone here. Lakshmi Devi, she's looking for a nice place to live. She's moving around village to village, city to city throughout the world. So that's why the impetus they have to decorate very attractively, lots of ghee lamps, hanging ghee lamps, and all kinds of ghee lamps, and very clean house and new color. And everybody dresses up in new clothes that day. All the ladies get new saris, their husbands give them all new saris and bangles. And they buy themselves new clothes, and they buy new clothes for all their children. And everyone's dressed very attractively. It's a very wonderful day. When you actually live in the, like you're kind of immersed a little bit, immersion in the villages, and you see the transformation, the day-to-day life throughout the year, and all of a sudden it's Diwali, and all the paint's flying everywhere, and everyone's buying new clothes, and everyone's because everyone looks so ordinary, and then on Diwali everyone's so dressed up, and makeup, ladies have makeup, and the rest of the time they're just covered with cow dung and cow dung and simple saris and no earrings or anything. And it's really quite a beautiful transformation, and it's all done for the pleasure of Lakshmi Devi. It's not done, the woman's not dressing up to please her husband, and the man's not dressing up to please his wife. It's all done, oh Lakshmi, look, we look, come to our house, see, even our kids look clean. One day a year our kids are clean. One day a year for a few hours our kids are clean without mud on their face and everything. And we saved up our money, you know, we're poor, but we saved up our money, you know, because they're poor. They save up our money, we got new shirt and pants, and this looks so wonderful. So in the same way, the quality of humility, which is also a shakti, dainya shakti, it's one of the shaktis of Lakshmi Devi, or one of the shaktis of Radharani. She is, we say that Radharani is Lajeshwari. She's Lajeshwari. She's the queen of shyness or meekness. So that's a shakti. That's a power. That's a power. It's one of the powers of a woman, is shyness. So Radharani is the queen or the goddess or the empress of Lajeshwari. So Dainya is also a shakti, is also a power. And Radharani is the queen of that. She's the perfection of humility and shyness. So as Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, is traveling around on Diwali looking for a house to live in. So the quality of humility, this shakti known as Dainya Devi or Dainya, this humility, it travels around the houses of devotees looking for the quality of humility, looking for humility. She's looking in the hearts of the devotees. Oh, is humility here? Oh, I'm attracting. I am the goddess of humility. And I see some humility manifesting and growing in the heart of this devotee. I want to live there. I mean, What I meant to say is that if we develop this humility, just as the Indians, they clean their house and make everything to attract Lakshmi. So if we develop this humility, which will actually cleanse our heart and make our hearts very attractive, it's a sarvabhushanam, humility, then Sri Nam Prabhu will be attracted to live in our heart. Trinadapi Sunichainam. So this, because Nam, as Lakshmi, this, I got lost in my analogy of Lakshmi, I couldn't get to back to the point. But the point is that as Lakshmi Devi is looking for a proper place to reside, the Nam Prabhu is looking for a proper place to reside. So the Shaktiman is always residing with Shakti. So Nam Prabhu is Shaktiman. So he's looking for Shakti. What Shakti is he looking for? Dainya Shakti, humility. So when that Shakti comes into our heart, when the quality or the Shakti, the guna or Shakti, the quality of humility comes in our heart in a very attractive way, in a very deep way, in a very genuine way, in a very real way, then Sri Nam Prabhu, who is the Prabhu or the Swami of that Shakti, he will be attracted. Oh, you, so much humility is in your heart, I must come also. Because I cannot be separated from humility. Because humility is my consort. The consort of Nam Prabhu is humility, just as the consort of Krishna is Radha, and the consort of Narayan is Lakshmi. So Trinadapi Sunichena. So this is these last verses, as I mentioned, so humility is the constant friend of the devotee from beginning to end. So in these last few verses of this Tritiyam Sarana, Bhaktivinoda Thakura is describing humility from the viewpoint of the Jatarati Sadaka. Because throughout his discussion of secrets of bhajan, there's two tracks, like a railroad train. The train of bhajan, there's like two tracks. There's one track, there's secrets of bhajan for one track, and secrets of bhajan for another track. And one track of the train of bhajan is the secrets of bhajan for the Ajatarati Sadaka. That practitioner who has not come to the level of bhav, his rati, or bhav for Krishna, has not janma, has not been born, has not awakened. So he's called Ajata Rati Sadaka. And Jata Rati means that his bhav is awakened. So someone on the level of bhav, he'll also have humility, very deep and intense humility. So these last few verses of this Tritiyayam Sadhana, he's describing Trinadapi Sunichena from the viewpoint of the Jata Rati Sadaka. Text 16, 17, and 18. Then, this is from, also from Yamuna Stotra. And the title of this verse is Humility Manifests in Self-Surrender. Apur adishu yopiko piva gunato shani yata vida tadayam tava parapadmayor aham madeva maya samarpita. Translation. O Bhagavan, in this material existence, there are the bodily distinctions of male and female. And according to the three modes of material nature, sattva, rajas, and tamas, there are divisions of the four varnas and four ashramas. In this way, humanity is unlimitedly variegated. O Praneshwar, let me take birth in any kind of body or in any condition. It does not matter, because now I am completely surrendered unto your lotus feet. And there is nothing I consider mine. So this is a very high expression of humility. And this type of expression very much echoes the fourth verse of the Shikshastakam, Nadanana Janana Sundarim, where he says, Mama Janmani Janmaneshwari Bhautad Bhaktir Hoitakitvi, where when one comes to the platform of Ruchi, then he's receiving so much taste from the practice of Krishna consciousness, that he realizes, if I take another birth, kita janmahao, even if I'm born as an insect, let it be in the house of a devotee, so I can taste Krishna prasad and hear the holy name, because already now, As a human being, I have that ruchi for Krishna. And that ruchi can never be destroyed. Even if my material body is destroyed and I take rebirth as an insect in the home of a devotee, still I'll continue to relish the holy name. Just as Bharat, when he became a deer, he was also relishing Nam Sankirtan. So this is a very high expression of humility here, also by Yamunacharya. But this is type of humility that one at the level of Jatarati Sadako will feel. Then this nice Bengali version of this: Sri Purusha Deha Gata Varna Adi Dharma Jata Tate Puna Deha Gata Bhed Sattva Rajas Tamagun Ashrayeta Bhedapun E Rupa Sahasra Prabhed Ye Kon Sharira Taki Ye Avashta Guna Raki Se Ahamta Eva Tavapai Sampi Lama Pranishwara Mama Bali Atapara Arakichunav Rahiladhai. And he says, O Bhagavan, giving up this false identification with the material male or female body, with social classification and so on, I surrender this body at your lotus feet. Praneshwara, you are my life. Pran means life, and Ishwaram controller. Praneshwara, you only are my life. As long as a jiva falsely identifies with a gross and subtle body, he cannot enter pure bhajan. When the living entity is established in the mood of the verse taught by Sriman Mahaprabhu, Naham Vipro Nacha Narapatir Napi, or in other words, when he has become free from all material designations, the door to the realm of bhajan opens. So this is the level, on the level of bhava. Actually, real bhajan begins on the level of bhava. And this verse is very much explaining humility on that level, as are the next two verses. So, we'll read those two verses. And you're very humbly listening. So, I mean, we're simply reading and somehow you're managing to stay awake and listen. And to these sacred words of the great acharyas, Yamunacharya and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So we also pray that we can have the same attentive humility that you are all displaying. In text 17, this is humility for the Jata Rati Sadaka, the Sadaka who has come to the level of Bhava Bhakti. He also exhibits deep humility. So, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in his Bhajan Rahasyam, that this verse, Chinada Pisunichena Taroi Vasahishana, this describes the qualities that one who is Nishta, Adoshada Tata Sarasanga Bhajanakriya Anartha Nivritti, Bhajanakriya Sarasanga Bhajanakriya Anartha Nivritti Tata Nishta. When one comes to the level of Nishta, he will have these qualities very firmly in place in his mind, heart, and actions, humility and tolerance, and pridelessness and respect for all. So these would be the symptoms of one at Nishta. And one who has these four qualities, who is at the level of Nishta, another symptom of one who's on the level of Nishta is that he chants without offenses and without aparads. And if he's chanting without offenses, without aparads and without anarthas, then when he chants the holy name, there'll be some abhas, sattvic vikar abhas, or you can say reflections or shadows of the symptoms of bhava. Some tears will come in the eyes, some trembling in the body, and some hairs will feeling of tingling sensation or hairs standing on the end when the person chants the Maha Mantra at the level of Nishta, beginning level of Nishta. But this particular, and so humility is very much part and parcel of the person's consciousness and feeling and thinking and actions. And at the higher end, these last verses here, 16, 17, 18, we made a note that these are at the higher end of Nishta. That is Nishta, as one goes further up Nishta, then he comes, because there's overlapping, it's not like you go in one room and then you open a door and leave that room completely and enter into another room. In other words, we're in Anartha Nivritti and we become steady. And generally they say we become steady in our sensual activities. Our body and senses become steady in the practices of bhakti, but our mind is not steady. That's in when as the anarthas go more and more away, and then our mind becomes steady. Then when our mind, our senses, mind, and intelligence are fixed very firmly in deep faith, then we enter into nishta. Then nishta goes into ruchi, and they're overlapping. It's not that you're only in nishta and there's no ruchi. Even there's ruchi at the level of anarthanivrti. It's ruchi abhas. Otherwise, as Prabhupada explains in the beginning of Nectar Devotion, without some ruchi, without some mellow or ras, we can't go on in any activity. So even in the level of anarthanivrti, it's not that we're not getting some ruchi from prasad and philosophy and harikata and hearing the holy name. So anarthanivrti and nishta and ruchi are all kind of mixed in together. Even though we may be officially designated, we are on the level of anarthanivrti. But there's a little few drops of ruchi coming there, and there's some nishta there also. And then the nishta increases more and more, and the ruchi increases more and more, and then the anarthas decrease more and more, and then all of a sudden we become situated not on the level of anarthanivrti, but on the level of nishta. And then there's still some anarthas, which will continue. Even the fragrance of anarthas goes up to bhava. So then nishta is there, and then ruchi, then as nishta goes up and up, ruchi comes more and more, and then we go into ruchi. It's like this. There's no overlapping. Like in the color spectrum, it's infrared and ultraviolet, but then it's infrared, then red, then orange, then yellow, then yellowy green, and then green, and then blue, and then blue green, and dark blue. Then, you know, this, you've seen all the rainbow. So the bhakti is something like this. It's not all red and then purple, or purple and red. It's like, you know, there's a spectrum, degrees. But at the same time, there's the primary lakshana, or the primary quality we may describe, will designate us at a certain level, but at the same time, there's some, at least in this, at this level of madhyam and the kanishtha, there's the overlapping of some anarthas and some few drops of ruchi are there. It's like an abhas, it's called. It's not pure ruchi. So this verse is, again, this is from Krishna Karnamrita by Bilvamangala Thakur. It's text 17 in Chittiyam Sarana, Bhajan Rahasyam, describing an ideal example of sincere humility. In other words, this type of humility, which Bilvamangala Thakur is describing for the sadhaka, will manifest in the sadhaka, in a devotee who is at the higher end, or is at the very developed nishta. The other type of humility that we are expressing by Yamunacharya is the humility that will be expressed and felt and prayed for at the lower level of nishta. And this is at the higher level. You can even take it so far that this type of humility is even at the level of rati, of a jata rati sadhaka. So that's why I said this is the high end of nishta. The devotee prays for Krishna's blessings with sincere humility.
Ibada Muradan Jala Esha Yache Nirandra Danyo Nati Mukta Kantam Dayanide Deva Bhavat Kataksham Dakshinyalash Leshena Sakrinishincha.
O Deva, O Ocean of Mercy, with folded hands raised to my head, I humbly offer this prayer to you. Please just once shower me with your merciful sidelong glance. So we've heard these other prayers of humility, and that these prayers are like looking at your beloved through a pair of binoculars. You know binoculars? You know, these big glasses. You're looking at your beloved and she's about 1 mile away and you're looking at her with binoculars. And this prayer is like standing face to face to your beloved and speaking. So you see the intimacy, how much greater the intimacy is. Humility is also being described, but here, in the other prayers, it's so, you're Patita Pavan, I'm down here drowning in this ocean, and you're way up there in Vaikuntha, please extend your unlimited, you're Ananta, the word is used Ananta. Ananta means you have your arm is 50 million miles long, right? So you're up there 50 million miles away in Vaikuntha, and I'm down here in the Bhava Sagar, and Bhavasindhu, ocean of material existence, drowning. So, A, Ananta, Hey, Patita Pavan, please extend your 50 million mile long arm and down here to the ocean and pick me up and free me. But what does this one say? Hands folded to my head, I humbly offer this prayer to me, to just once shower me with your merciful sidelong glance. Sidelong glance means you're 3 feet away. Because beyond 3 feet away, you can't tell whether someone's looking straight or to the side. So this is a very intimate prayer. So this is bhava. This is the kind of intimacy that the Jatarati Sadaka shares with the Lord, that he's face to face, mouth to mouth, eye to eye, heart to heart, chest to chest with the Lord. And who is standing like this with their hand above their heads? Yajna Patnis. Right? Don't stand like that. Don't cross your breast like this. Raise your hands above your head. Fold your hands. Don't cross your legs. Stand straight. Because they were crossing their legs and crossing their arms because they were shy. They were the kanyas, virgins. They wanted to protect their sanctity from the gaze of the man. But that man was to be their eternal husband. So then he demanded absolute surrender. So don't, their legs were crossed. Their hair was hanging in front and their arms were like this. He said, oh, you've made an offense to Varuna. Stand with your hands full. And so then they went like this. They put their hands in front of their breasts like this. So they're still protecting their breasts. He said, not like that. Raise your arms above your head like this. And then they had their legs crossed. Their thighs crossed. And he said, and straighten your legs. And, oh, Krishna. Okay, here I am. I'm yours. Tavevasmi, tavevasmi, najivami toyavina, iti vigaya radhetam, nayamam charanantikam. So they have absolutely surrendered everything for the pleasure of Krishna. This naked surrender, the whole naked beauty, they were revealed. Their heart, their bodies, their souls, everything was offered on the altar of sacrifice for the pleasure of Govinda. So here, this is the kind of humility. Hands raised to my head, I pray, please, just... And what is he saying? This is a prayer of humility of the Jatarati Sadaka. Is he saying, deliver me? No. Is he saying, save me, help me? He's saying, just look at me. Right? See the prayer. O ocean of mercy, with folded hands raised to my head, I humbly offer this prayer to you. Please just once shower me with your sidelong glance. That's all I want. Only a glance. Just look at me. Wherever I am. I'm not asking for deliverance. I'm not asking for liberation. I'm not calling you Mukunda. I'm not calling you Patita Pavan. I'm saying, Deva. Deva means divyati. Divyati means playful. Oh, playful Lord. Oh, Divya. Oh, Deva. You're playful. Playful. Deva means Lord, but it also means divyati. It means very playful, very sport, prankish, and unpredictable, funny. Oh, funny, playful Lord. Oh, ocean of mercy. All I want is this. Just look at me. Just glance at me. So this is the ideal example of sincere humility. Humility for humility's sake. Just look at me. That's all. So the purport, it says, in this verse, Lila Shuk Bilvamangala Thakur prays in a distressed voice, induced by the humility caused by the feelings of separation, viraha, felt by Sri Radha. So it's very much humility in Gopi Bhav. When Sri Krishna left for Mathura, he was separated from Radha and lived far away. This type of viraha is called pravas, specifically sudur, very far away. Srimati Radhika, agitated by extreme separation, spoke with great humility to the bumblebee in chapter 47 of the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, text 21. Smarati sa pitri gehan. O bumblebee, does Aryaputra, the son of a noble person, remember us? Radha also asked, upon happily returning from Ujjain, will Krishna come to Vrindavan? She asked this question. When Krishna disappeared from the rasa dance, Radha cried out, Dasyaste kripanaya me sakhe dashe sannidhim. O Lord, I am your maidservant. Please show yourself and make me satisfied. There's a picture of Radharani there. I mean, my clock has a picture of Radharani, and somehow she got excited when I repeated her statement. Desirous of this kind of humility, Sri Leela Shuk is saying, O Krishna, make me a traveler on the pathway of your eyes. Please give me service to you. Only by your mercy can I serve in your intimate secret Nikunj Leela. Upon attaining this service, the jiva becomes forever successful. If I am unqualified for this service, then let me worship you, immersed in these sentiments. I am an offender. Nonetheless, you are an ocean of mercy. I beg you, do not pay attention to my faults, and please make me the creeper. Please make the creeper of my desire bear fruit. This is my prayer to you. So text 18. This is the last text of the Tritiyam Sadhana, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur is describing humility again for the Jata Rati Sadhak, because they're basically in each yama, each section of the Astakali description of the eight pastime periods and the eight shlokas of Shikshastakam, he's giving verses, rahasyam verses, to cultivate the bhajan of the Jatarati Sadaka, and secret or rahasya verses or rahasya shlokas to cultivate the bhajan more and more of the Jatarati Sadaka, the one who's in bhav and the one who's not in bhav. So this is again from Krishna Karanamrita, another secret verse. These are secrets, a very secret thing. Mayi prasadam madare katakshe vamsi nidana nuchare videhi Twayi prasanne kimiha parenas Twaya prasanne kimiha parenha. O Krishna, kindly bestow your mercy upon me through your sweet sidelong glances, which are accompanied by the sound of your flute. When you are pleased with me, there is no harm if others are not. But if you become displeased, even if others are pleased, what is the use? So it explains here, with one note, it says, the sadhaka at the... This is, in other words, this prayer is expressing the humility of the Jatarati Sadaka, who is actually, because of his bhav, he's awakened in his sthayi bhav, so he's identifying and following the eternal residence of Vrindavan, like Rati Mandri or Rupa Mandri, or the moods of even Srimati Radharani's heart. So when he reads Karnamrita by Vilvamangala Thakur, verses like this, which are actually coming from the heart of Srimati Radharani and her expressing her own humility in Mahabhav and separation from Krishna, then that Jatarati Sadaka identifying being tadatmika with Radharani's feelings, or trying to identify, he will express this verse and have different feelings and experiences of different bhavas because he's on the level of bhava. But for the second level, for us, for the sadhaka, the ajata rati, who has not developed, come to the level of bhava, he's on the level of nishta, because Trinada Pisanichina, one who has developed these four qualities, he's considered to be on the level of nishta. He will progress in his kirtan to the point of glory. He will progress in his kirtan and his nam bhajan where he will come to the point of glorifying Krishna's Shringar Leela with Radharani. So this is at the high end of nishta. As we progress in nishta and chanting prayers like this and praying for the mercy of Bilvamangala Thakur and the residence of Vrindavan, that such feelings and emotions will descend into our heart then that in fact will lift us up the ladder of nishta and bring us quickly to the platform of ruchi, asakti, and bhava. There's a purport here I can read. I can't really see it from there, that's the only problem. Remembering her previous amorous sports, vilas, with Sri Krishna in the kunjas, Sri Radhika becomes restless in separation from him. In this viraha pralap, incoherent talk, which is filled with separation, lamentation, due to separation from Krishna, Radhika says, "O Prananath, please enter the kunj, casting the same sidelong glance as you did before." What is the nature of Krishna's glance? As Krishna plays on his flute, his sidelong glance indicates to Radha to enter the kunj. For this reason, the flute is a giver of bliss. Someone may question, at the time of Ras Lila, if Murli Vadan's sidelong glance signals to Sri Radha alone, what about the other gopis? The answer is, in other words, they're in the rasa dance and there's thousands of gopis and Krishna's playing his flute and then he signals to Radharani, you know, meet me over there. And she signals back, okay, and she disappears. And all the gopis say, where is she going? And then I can understand some favor is being bestowed here upon Radha and they may feel something. So what about the other gopis? The answer is that by the inconceivable potency, achintya shakti, contained within Krishna's flute and his sidelong glance, Krishna signals to Sri Radha directly and to all the other gopis indirectly. So he not only gives a sankate means signal. So sankate kunj means the appointed kunj or the signaled kunj. Sankate kunj. Krishna indicates or signals to which kunj he wants to meet Srimati Radhika in directly. But then indirectly, he communicates a similar message to all the other 16,107 gopis in the rasa dance. Radhika says, "I am only concerned with your happiness. If all of us gopis become unhappy, but you are happy, then that is my cherished desire." This is from Auntie Leela. "If it pleases you to not appear before me, then even the gopis' endeavors to find you cannot please me." In other words, if Krishna wants to be separated from Radharani and then the other gopis go and try to find Krishna to bring Krishna to Radharani, then Radharani say, no, if you don't want to see me or don't want to appear before me, even if the gopis endeavor to bring you, then I won't be pleased by that because you don't want that. By resolutely performing bhajan with the sentiments described in this third chapter, the stage of ruchi will arise and gradually the sadhaka will attain prem. So that's kind of the end of the chapter, but it's not the end of the chapter in our discussion. And this, it's out of time. Last two verses, 17 and 18, we have additional translations. We could stay 2 more minutes because we might as well finish this up. Okay, this is an expanded translation for text 17. These are both verses by Bilvamangala Thakur. And Yadunandan Thakur was one of the great Gaudiya Vaishnava. I can't recall just now. I don't know if it's the same Yadunandan. I don't believe it's the same Yadunandan Acharya, who is the guru of Raghunath Das. It's another Yadunandan who came a little bit later. But he wrote many bhajans and many commentaries on different books. So he expanded the translation of the text 17. Radha says, "O Krishna, you who take joy in your dalliances with the Brajagopis, I fold my hands over my head, and according to the ritual etiquette of humility, I fold my hands over my head according to the ritual etiquette of humility." In other words, this is an etiquette, this is a ritual, this is a sign of humility, as the gopis, Kanyakumari showed in the bank of the Yamuna, Gopi Vastraharana. "I fold my hands over my head according to the ritual etiquette of humility. I am your maidservant, and I beg you loudly and clearly with the following words, please hear this. O Lord of my life, if looking directly at me somehow interferes with your pleasure, then don't bother. Because sometimes they ask the question, why does Radharani look with Radhakripa Kataksha? Why does she look with a sidelong glance? So someone tries to explain that Radharani, she looks at Krishna with one quarter of her glance. Sidelong means, the eye is so full, but sidelong means just one quarter, 25%. Why is that? A couple of reasons. One reason why Radharani looks at Krishna, because here Radharani is praying to Krishna, but Radharani looks at Krishna with a sidelong glance, because even when Radharani casts a sidelong glance at Krishna, that's enough, that's sufficient to make his peacock feather fall off, for him to drop his flute, for his turban to fall off, and even sometimes for him to fall at her feet and cry and wash her feet with an abhishek of his tears and beg her forgiveness if she's in Mon. So if she was to look full on, full eyes at Krishna, then he would be just melt into a pool. And that's what she did one time, and he melted into a pool known as Shamkund. So they say why Radharani is only looking with a sidelong glance, because that's one thing. But the other thing is, she's looking one quarter, because she keeps one quarter, a sidelong glance on Krishna. One fourth of her glance is on Krishna. One fourth of her glance is looking for her rivals. One fourth of her glance is looking for Vipaksha Sakis like Chandravali and Shaivya and Padma. Where are those Sakis? Are they coming? Are they lurking somewhere in the bushes or kunjas? Are they going to catch my Krishna? Where are they? And then, oh, there's Krishna. Where are they? Where's Krishna? Where are they? So one quarter for rivals, one quarter for Krishna. And one quarter is for her superiors and in-laws, like her mother-in-law, Jatila. Oh, I'm late coming back from Suryakund. Will Jatila come looking for me and catch me with Vishma Sharma, Krishna disguised? Of course, if she was there, will she catch me in Radhakund? So one quarter is looking for Jatila or her rascal sister-in-law, Kutila, or what to speak of Abhimanyu, her so-called husband. So that's one quarter. And another quarter is looking for her Sakis. Because when she's alone with Krishna, she's always looking, oh, are the Sakis coming? She's not worried about Mandris, because they're like her heart, her pran. And even they're called pran Sakis. The Mandris are called pran Sakis, because they can enter Radharani's heart, they can be next to Radharani. Wherever Radharani's heart is, they are. So they're pran Sakis, the Mandris. But when she has one eye, 25%, she's looking, Lita's coming? I think I hear ankle bells. Vishaka's coming? Well, she sees me like this, it's very bad. Oh, quick, Krishna, quick, dress me, as I was before, put my makeup on, put my beni back, everything, fix me nice. So in this way, Radharani's, quarter of her glance is like this. So here, Radharani's saying, oh, Krishna, if you don't want to look at me, if I'm not so good looking that you want to look at me straight on, oh, doesn't that just look at me like this from the corner of your eye? She's saying like that. If looking directly at me somehow interferes with your pleasure, then don't bother. Even a brief sidelong glance will drench me with nectar. Your glances are so soft, so generous, that even a drop of that nectar will inundate me and extinguish the flames of my distress. Listen, O friend, to this helpless person's plea. Return to the Rasa dance again, dressed as the best of dramatic actors, and dance with the Brajagopis. I know you are an ocean of compassion. So if I have offended you in some way, then please forgive me. Please come back and let me see you in that form. So that was a translation of text 17 of Bhajan Rahasyam, Bilvamangala Thakur's Krishna Karnamrita. And then one more for text 18, and that will conclude. And then tomorrow we'll start Tiroli Vasahishana. This is again the same, Yadananda Thakur. Radha says, O love of my life, please listen to my prayer. Please show me the glance you make as a signal to meet me in the forest. That glance, along with the messenger of your flute song, calls us to the beautiful Rasmandal, which gives joy to the eyes and ecstasy to the heart. You may say, other women will recognize the trick and get angry with me. Stay stay with your sakis. Stay with your sakis and do something else. For you to ask me for such a glance exclusively for yourself is quite wrong. If you say this, then I will reply. This is Radharani saying to Krishna, Krishna, if you say this, then I will reply. If you are happy with me and dress in that way, look at me in that way and come to me, then I don't care what I don't care what thousands of gopis may think. What difference does it make to me if they are angry with me? On the other hand, if I don't see you, I will die. If you are displeased with me and deny me your darshan, then even if every gopi acts as my friend, that will not give me any satisfaction. Their sympathy will simply increase my pain. So please come to me. Shrimati Radha Rani Ki Jai. Bhajan Rahasyam Ki Jai. So, is there any questions or quick questions? Anything? We're kind of late. Some devotees go with Vrindavan.
Vanchakalpa, yeah, question after that. Vanchakalpa, the astrakis, a single day.